Welcome to the High and Low Podcast. This is your host, Bravo, Bravo, Ducking Bravo. I just had to do some power poses, crack my back, touch my toes, get limber, because I just subjected myself to the first hour of Bravo's production of Erica Jayne, Bet on Blonde. Or is it Bet It All on Blonde? Who cares? And before we get into that, I've found some very interesting things out, slash an account that I enjoy, Bravo for the Rest of Us, the word four is the number four, messaged me an article that I either hadn't read or had blocked out of my mind. And whichever it was, I'm frustrated with myself because it's an article about Jim Wilkes. And for anyone who forgets who Jim Wilkes is, he is the lawyer out of Florida who went on vacation with Tom and Erica a few times and has been funding her since the downfall of Girardi. He was the one who was featured in Housewife on the Hustler Part 2 that had given her $700,000 when this all happened, and then himself said this whole thing is costing him millions. He's an odd bird, as a man from Florida might be. He's taken a few shirtless pics of himself and put them up on Instagram. And in fact, right now, on his stories, there's a picture of him unclothed with his young wife, I believe she's 30-ish, unclothed, latched onto him, showing her tattoos and her naked body, but we can't see the front of her breasts because they're squished against his hairy chest. And they're taking a nudie selfie, and he's sharing that with the world today. So the next time you have a conversation with someone and you're like, oh, that got awkward, I overshared, not that bad, you didn't. But the article that was sent to me by Bravo for the Rest of Us was about his arrest. And in the mayhem of Girardi stuff, I don't remember this or I missed it again. This was published April 13th, 2023. So almost a year, not quite a year. And it says that, you know, he's a Tampa trial lawyer. He gained notoriety for suing nursing homes. That's how he made his money. That's what this article in the Tampa Bay Times says that his law firm is most widely known for. Then it says, police on Monday arrested James Lewis Wilkes II, 72, so he's 73 now, on charges of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a felony, and a misdemeanor battery. The woman involved in the incident also might be prosecuted, police said. I believe it's his young wife, younger wife, that they're talking about in this article, but I don't think they ever say her name, but it's a woman who lives with him in his house. And it says Wilkes called 911 shortly before 7 a.m. and said a woman had hit him in the face during an argument in the home they share. I'm not going to say the street that they live on. During the 911 call, the dispatcher could hear a woman in the background shouting that Wilkes had pulled a gun on her and shot a wall. He told police that he and the woman, whose name and relationship to him are redacted from the report, were arguing when the woman hit him in the head with something, possibly her hand. He said he was worried she was going to get one of his guns, so he went to the bedroom where he moved a handgun and a shotgun. He said he was still afraid, so he picked up a .45 caliber handgun. All right, trigger warning, skip forward 30 seconds because this is going to get a little uglier before it gets better. The woman told police that she hit Wilkes, and after that, he fired into the bed and the wall. Then he put the gun to her temple and then her torso and threatened to end her. It says that he was booked and he posted $1,000 bail and got out, and that police did not arrest the woman. They did file a charge of battery on a person older than 65. These old white guys, I tell you. So that's just some information on the man who has been bankrolling Erica Jayne. And as I'm sitting here, I'm actively opening a container of vitamins. You know what? I gotta be me. It's gummies. And here's what's frustrating. I don't ever want to be a sellout, you know? I'd rather be broke in the streets panhandling than a sellout. And so, but I go on and I'm like, oh, let me try to get a sponsorship. You know what I mean? And there's one company, and this one company's like, but do you promote any illicit drugs? I'm like, well, yes, I do. Do you think I'm going to raw dog going into an election year and watching Bravo? My dog's crying. Hold on. The dog had to go outside. She's been in her defense, she's been locked in here with me watching that show. So I don't blame her. She ran off. But anyway, like I was saying, I keep going to these places of products that I like, products that I use, and in the fine print, it's like, but you can't promote any illicit drugs now on your podcast. Well, I'm going to. If me saying that I take a gummy versus you being someone who's like, I had 4 glasses of wine tonight is a problem, then it's a problem. All right. It's a problem. And if it's wrong, I don't want to be right. I can't drink, you monsters. It hurts my tummy. I don't like to drink. And somehow the male podcasters, they're doing just fine. You turn on Joe Rogan, he's telling you about tripping balls on ayahuasca. So I really don't want to get chided for 2 milligrams of a gummy. Aliens are real, or beings from another dimension. The planet's heating up. There's no amount of money that anyone could give me that would make me stop taking my gummies or saying that I'm taking my gummies. But it's fine. These are not big problems to have. And one day the perfect sponsor is going to come along and it's going to be great. There's no way to be ready for this, but let's do it. This is a recap of Bravo's production of Bet on Blonde, Erika Jayne's Vegas residency documentary. It's very dramatic. It is very focused on the feelings of Mikey and Erika, and we get to meet Laia. The assistant's name is, I don't know. Either way, she's there too. And the entire energy of this, just so that you're aware, before we get in, so you know what the temp of the water is that we're about to be immersed into, it is a very woe is them, underdog, can we pull this off? No one's giving us enough money. We don't have enough time to practice. Life is so hard. We have other things going on. We need this type vibe. Disclaimer, there will be some paraphrasing. This is my opinion. I'm describing the show to you through my own thoughts and rememberings and scribbles and viewpoint. So the opening scene is Los Angeles with Mikey narrating. And he's giving this kind of like pep talk slash very serious summary of what's been going on. And it says 24 hours until showtime on the screen. And it, to me, it struck me as like intense fake drama. You know, they're kind of both talking to each other and they're like, well, there hasn't really been enough time. There hasn't been enough time to really perform. And he's like, you need to bring it. Like, that's what's happening. And there's challenges and we've done what we can do. As your friend, I have to tell you, there's a piece missing. And Mikey's crying, like big time crying, weeping. I would say weeping. And Erika is stoic. She's stoic. And she has to just stay strong.
And she's like, it's up to me. As my friend, you can't fix this for me. It's up to me. I have to bring it. I have to be present and I have to bring it.
And that's 60 seconds in. 60 seconds in. I had to pause it and I was in disbelief of what I'm seeing. And it really is the old adage of people are dying, Kim. And of course, I just did the deep dive into the Marco lawsuit. So I saw how cutthroat Mikey and Erika and Lalaya can be when they want to be about their own stuff. So it's really difficult to see them weeping about a Vegas residency and the show being a day away. You get to do a Vegas residency, but okay. And as Mikey is weeping, who will pick up this flag if I should fall? We see someone named Alexis Fisher, manager, a young woman, and she says,
we are less than 24 hours. This is everything that you have ever wanted. We need to make the most of it because you're not going to get this moment back.
The stakes are high, folks, is what we're being told. Then whoosh, whoosh, bah, the logo comes in. Bravo. Erika Jayne, Bet It All on Blonde. And Erika Jayne is a producer of this documentary thing. Then we see very big on the screen written 30 days earlier. And now there's harp music. We're slowing it down. A harp is playing and there's a very slow version of an Erika Jayne song. It's like when they do a scary movie, they'll take like a very popular song and then do a really slowed down version of it. That's what this was like. She's like, I'm a princess. Harp, harp, brum, brum.
I'm a temptress.
Brum, brum. Then big letters on the screen again, because they can't stop showing us big letters on the screen. Los Angeles. Yeah. We saw that from the skyline, but thank you. Harp is still playing. Brum, brum. B-roll of Erica's casita. So they're showing like the floor, the exterior of it, all the stuff we've seen on the show, but they've put a filter on it, a breathy filter. Remember what those Elizabeth Taylor perfume commercials used to look like? It looked like somebody breathed on the lens. That's what we got going on here. And RIP to that sassy brawn Elizabeth Taylor. Then we see Erica Jane. She's in a pink Adidas tracksuit in her backyard with a broom. She's not riding it. She's sweeping. Because remember, kids, witches are cool. They're in touch with humanity and nature. So Erica would never be a witch. And we pan to her feet and they show that she's got little slides on with socks. And no joke, I do love a slide with a sock. Very comfortable. And this scene went on for a beat too long, I would say.
I'm a temptress.
Bring, bring. Slides. Socks. The foot fetish. Maybe the person who has a foot fetish that helps to edit for Beverly Hills worked on this. Something to think about. Then we cut to Erica Jane saying,
today is a very exciting day. Today is the first day of rehearsals for my Vegas residency at the House of Blues in Mandalay Bay.
Then she gets introspective.
Between a divorce, competency hearings, indictments, bankruptcy hearings, you know, the last 3 years, they've sucked.
And everything she just mentioned is solely about her and Tom and nothing about the last 3 years have sucked because you realize that your life was paid for by people who are already suffering. Nothing like that was mentioned, just the stuff that, you know, court stuff she's had to deal with. And then the screen goes black again and we see in very big letters, scandal. And I'm already like, come on now. Come on now. You can't. Are you going to do this every time? I mean, this is happening very frequently that you're doing the black screen with letters or and telling us stuff. Like, this seems like a lot of filler. But we're having a sit down now. So now Erica has glam on. Before, she did not have glam on. She was barefaced with no extensions. So she had a normal human amount of hair. And now she's got a ton of hair like she's a pony. And she's on her couch wearing black. And she's like,
let's cut back 20 years. Back when Tom was a successful, I'm like, a successful what?
When he was successfully running game and people didn't know about it? Because that's all it was. He just hadn't been caught. But she's gassing it up. Like, she's gassing up remembering when Tom was great and he was at his height. To which I say, I don't know that he was ever great. I think he was just running game.
He had a great reputation. He had tons of cases and tons of money coming in and out of that firm. And Tom Girardi was a great plaintiff's lawyer.
No, he wasn't. He was a horrible plaintiff's lawyer, and he should have been disbarred probably back in the 70s or 80s. And you realize watching her, I realize watching her, that she needs to believe that Tom was the best. She was told he was the best. He got himself on magazine covers. He made a show of himself in courtrooms. He buddied up to law enforcement and to judges. And so I don't think anyone will ever really know how good he was because he had the system set up in such a way that he could not fail. It was almost impossible for him to fail. It was almost impossible for him to find a judge that he didn't have some connection with or to actually, you know what? That's not true. That's even me being lenient and nice. It was impossible for him to fail because he had the California bar in the bag. None of those investigators were ever going to press anything that was reported about him. Almost 300 people tried. It's very frustrating watching Erica, you know, go back and sort of eat that same BS sandwich that he cooked up fresh for everybody. She's still not, it's not hit her, I don't think, the gravity of it. I don't think she's, I don't know that she's ever read anything. Because this whole hour, this whole first hour, she says some glowing things about him, which is really confusing, given that in The Housewife and the Hustler Part 2, her legal team painted Tom again as what I'm calling like a short king monster tyrant, where he was horrible to her, told her she couldn't wear jeans, was like a dictator to her, called all the shots. But here in this, she's looking back on him lovingly. She talks about him at length, about being someone she looked up to.
He got the trick of life. He was charismatic.
He was a manipulator. He was charismatic because that was his way of manipulating people around him, and it worked. He had the sweet, old, harmless, short guy routine down.
Let me tell you a story about I was at John Wayne's house. You know John Wayne. You've ever seen John? I'm speaking. John Wayne, anyway. He walks in.
If a man starts telling you a story like that and he doesn't have money, you're not sticking around, okay? The only reason people gave Tom the time of day is because he threw gifts at them. He had a ton of money and influence, period. I don't think that that man was extremely charismatic. I think he was like the town bully that you knew you had to sit and listen to his dumb stories. But I digress. My point is, I don't think she still has any perspective on this. And she may never have perspective on it. And that's okay. It's her world.
He was a sweet man. I would have never predicted that I would have been in this situation with him, or that he would be in the situation that he is in. Diagnosed with Alzheimer's, dementia, cognitive, whatever you call it. He's in a memory care facility.
They show a bunch of news clips, breaking Tom's disbarment, all of his issues, all of his legal cases flashing on the news. Who could claim to
attorney Tom Girardi has been indicted? It's hard because I remember the warm, sweet Tom. The Tom that helped kids get into school. The Tom that paid for tuitions.
And everything she just said also describes to a T Jack Nicholson's character in The Departed. And the minute I found out that Tom Girardi had an illegitimate son who then went on to run the FBI office in Los Angeles, that is the character that I thought of. I was like, man, this is just like The Departed. You got this little guy running the town and he ingratiates himself into people of different generations, helping them get through school, doing them favors, whatever. And then he's got an army when they grow up. But to Erica, looking back, she still truly believes that, like, he was a sweet old man who did things out of the kindness of his heart. Whereas I look at it and I see, that was smart. He's trying to get people to owe him favors.
One time I asked him, I said, why did you choose plaintiff's...
What the hell is this word I wrote? Golly. Plaintiff's practice.
Why did you choose plaintiff's practice? And he said, because I don't like seeing people get effed over. But here we are 20 years later. And allegedly, he effed over everybody.
It's not allegedly, Mrs. Girardi. And knowing what we know now about Tom Girardi, I look back with very jaded sunglasses on. I look back and I see a man who, if you're going to take advantage of cases, what better cases to take advantage of than people who are already injured, already weak, and trust you? That's the most disgusting thing you can think of. It literally is like taking things from, children, widows and orphans. And that's exactly what he did. People with the least amount of resources, support, and emotional capacity to fight. So sitting here watching her gas him up was surreal.
It was a massive fall from grace. I was married to him for over 2 decades. You don't shrug that off lightly. And when it's everywhere, people reminding you and saying some of this is your fault too, I was not prepared for this. I'm not asking for people's sympathy. None of it should have happened. I feel terrible about the clients and that they did not receive what they were entitled to receive. These people have been wronged, harmed. They want answers from the law firm they put their trust in. I am not that law firm. I am not indicted. But because of the last few years, I'm tired, man. I'm beat down. I have self-doubt. I have negative loops running through my head. I have negative news coming at me. I've lost everything. I'm starting over.
To which I say, you have not lost everything. You may feel that you have lost everything, but you have not lost everything. Case in point, the next scene. Her assistant shows up. The woman who lost everything. Her assistant shows up. The same Leia from the lawsuit Marco Marco, where it is Leia, Mikey, and Erica doing the whole wiretap meeting. Leia is the one who primarily texted Chris and or Marco for adjustments to Erica's costuming and making new costumes and things like that. So she has been her assistant since probably 2014 or before, just from what we know from Marco Marco saying that she was in that meeting when they all first met in 2014. So she walks up to the door and Erica opens it wide and she's like,
let's get that bread day one.
And she tells her how she found a $20 bill in the yard. And she feels like that's a sign that money's going to fall from the sky. Because if anyone deserves money to fall from the sky again in their life, it's this woman. Hasn't she suffered enough? She has not had a full house cleaning staff in 3 years. She no longer gets to drive her Lamborghinis. The multiple homes are gone. Yes, universe, let it rain money down on Erica Jane once more. We go to a black screen, and on the black screen is written 30 days until Vegas show. By that point, I had been watching the show for about an hour, and I felt so weary, and my hand was tired, and I was just like, I can't do this all night. And so I paused it, and I was 6 minutes in. And it reminded me of that, if you've heard it, you've heard it, that famous 911 call where a guy calls in, and it was his first time ever having some sort of like an edible. I'm going to see if I can find it. It doesn't belong to anybody. It literally belongs to the internet. It gets played all the time and turned into like cartoon reenactments and stuff. And he calls 911 and he's like, I need send an ambulance. The time's moving too slow. It's just moving too slow. Oh my God, I just looked it up and I found it. It's from 2019 and it was actually a cop and his wife got too high on edibles and called 911 on themselves. It says that the cop admitted that he was confiscating weed from suspects, from people he was arresting, and then he would take it and bake it. He baked it into brownies and ate it with his wife. Okay, I found it. Here it is. I'm going to play it for you.
I think I'm having an overdose and so is my wife.
Overdose of what?
Marijuana. I don't know if it had something in it. Can you please send rescue?
Did you guys have fever or anything?
No, I think we're dying.
How much did you guys have?
I don't know. We made brownies, and I think we're dead. Time is going by really, 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 really slow.
Well, even the news people are laughing. That was me 6 minutes in. Then we see the woman who has lost everything, slipping on a Celsius, driving her Land Rover with her assistant next to her to a dance studio where she's going to go spend her day gyrating in a studio with a bunch of young men in their 20s. And again, we ask, where does she get the strength? Mikey Minden, the third prong in the trifecta of aiding and abetting, welcomes Erica.
Erica Jane is here. Erica Jane has arrived.
And Erica Jane cackles. And the song in the background that's playing now is an instrumental version of If You Gave Me a Chance, I Would Take It. And Erica makes her rounds, hugging all of the dancers intensely.
Hi.
I moved a little bit into like some 227 territory just then.
Mary.
It's a fine line. Then Erica starts reminiscing about her friendship with Mikey going back to 2011. They show a photo of them where she looks like she's a PTA president and he is giving a very hardcore blue steel gaze into the camera.
He believed in me when no one else did. When I got this deal, I said, Mikey's gotta come with me. He's gotta direct it. That's a non-negotiable.
And then we show Mikey really grabbing the reins at the rehearsal. And saying, like,
we have 30 days. Our final dress will be on August 31st. That is 30 days away.
And so we know it's the end of July 2023. Then they introduce someone named Jamie Ruiz. They put everybody's name up, which is nice, you know? And they call her the dance captain. And she's leaning against a wall with her arms crossed. And you can't write this. It looks like I'm playing a Dance Dance Revolution. And I'm about to pick my dance fighter. And Jamie... Is it Jamie? Yeah, Jamie is mean mugging like she is a seasoned battle dancer. This is serious. And they describe Jamie's job as she's got to know where everybody's at and make sure people remember the moves. And she's their insurance policy. Heavy lies the crown of Jamie. And Erica says,
the show is broken up into six acts. Fantasy, love, escape, glitz, glamour, and fun. New stuff, old stuff, reimagined stuff.
She says she's happy when she performs, and the show is 80 minutes long. Hour and 20 minutes. Erica is wearing a sweatshirt that is bedazzled, black sweatshirt, bedazzled, with a message on the front that says, dreams so wet. And I found myself wondering if, like, Wet Seal and Gadzooks were still in business. You know, those old mall stores, that's the kind of place you'd expect to buy a sweatshirt like that. But we don't have time to daydream because Mikey is yelling like a drill sergeant himself, saying,
right, left, right, left.
Erica is in full jazzercise mode. Her hips are swaying side to side. What a simple time jazzercise was, wasn't it? I mean, I was a wee thing, but I remember it. Jazzercise and, you know, if you're lucky, your mom will get a froyo afterwards. Not ice cream. It's frozen yogurt. Now they're going to try to show a very human side of Erica Jane, so stay strong if you can, because a dog is involved. It's not fair what happens next. Anyone who knows me knows that I will not watch a movie if a dog is hurt. I have never seen John Wick, and I never will. Until my dying day, I will be haunted by two books. One, Old Yeller. Two, Where the Red Fern Grows. Emotional damage at a young age. So they show Erica walking into her casita, and she goes to her dog, who we've met before, has been all over her Instagram. Tiago is the dog's name, and Tiago is very old now. Erica talks about how her old house in Pasadena was robbed several times, which we know, and that Tom never wanted to get a dog because dogs can sense evil. No, that's not what she said. She says Tom never wanted to get a dog because he was a paper boy, and he was bitten on the ankle so many times, and like I said, dogs can sense evil. But then he broke down and he finally said, okay, that she could get a dog. So she got Tiago, and he's an old dog. And she says,
he's my best friend.
And then they show Tiago falling down because the dog is very old and he's probably arthritic. He was trying to go outside, I believe, and he fell over. And so she picks him up and takes him outside. And she says that when Tiago goes, it'll be the complete finish of her old life. Now, like with Real Housewives, the dogs and the kids are out of this. We appreciate them for what they are separately of and from the housewives. Like Buffalo Bill loved Precious, and it wasn't her fault that he did what he did. She was innocent of those crimes. What I'm saying is nobody would ever look down upon a wonderful dog for the actions of its owner. Just because Erica Jane has said that she doesn't understand what empathy is doesn't mean that Tiago doesn't. But just as I'm in my feels about Tiago, the screen goes black again. And we're doing this a little bit too much now. And on the screen, it says, distrust. And Erica says,
when I first moved in with Tom, I showed up with two garbage bags full of clothes. And my life became his life.
And my amazingly talented and hilarious friend, Kiki, at the Talk of Shame, made me laugh so hard yesterday. She made an edit of that right there. That section of Erica saying when she first moved in, she'd up with two garbage bags. And she put that over footage of old school Jersey Shore Angelina showing up to the beach house with two garbage bags of clothes and then focusing in on Mike's face for whose life, like her life became his life. It's up on her page right now, her Instagram, at the Talk of Shame. I was laughing so hard. It absolutely works. It's overlaid perfectly. But back to Erica. So this part, she's gassing him up again.
I admired Tom. He was a bright man. Tom was a mentor to me. I went to him with all of my insecurities, all my questions about life, questions about finance, questions about politics. You have to have someone in your life that you can go to, that you trust. And for me, that was my husband, Tom.
Excuse me, Ms. Girardi, I have a question. Yeah, in the back here with my hand up. So you say you went to Tom with all of these things. You leaned on Tom. You brought him all of your insecurities, all your questions about life, everything. He was a mentor, but he didn't know that you were working with the Secret Service and were being wired and sent in to go try to talk with Chris and get him to say something incriminating on tape per the Los Angeles Times articles that I was recapping per the lawsuit. Because as her legal team said in Housewife and the Hustler Part 2, Tom was not aware of her whole working with the Secret Service, meeting with Rob Savage, that she wasn't aware that Rob Savage, the head of the Secret Service office, was meeting with Tom. That's a lot to not know about someone that you're describing this way. And it's a weird way to talk about someone that also in that Housewife and the Hustler Part 2 documentary was described as just kind of this monstrous bully of a husband that wouldn't let you wear jeans and was just painted in a terrible light. But you're talking about him like he was the best. But why, oh why, do I try to apply logic and reason to anything these days? Then we're doing sort of like a life story flashback of Erica Jane. We show Real Housewives season 6, filmed back in 2015, her first season, I believe. A picture of her from childhood talking about she had a hard time trusting people. And she learned that as a child and that she would go on stakeouts with her mom to try to catch her stepdad cheating. That she's, and what she's doing right now is she's sort of laying the groundwork, the foundation for us, that she did not have a male figure in her life growing up, and that if anything, she was taught to not trust men. And yet, she marries this older man, and so for her, it's probably, you know, this daddy issues thing is what we're going for here.
I was 29, and I married someone almost 60 years old.
Not just someone, a rich guy.
Tom made me feel comfortable in my own skin. He also had a lot of money. I trusted him. A lot of people trusted this man, and a lot of people saw him as a successful human being. Now, I don't know if absolute trust is even possible for me.
Then, out of nowhere, someone is knocking on her door slash gate, because they've showed so many photos of the exterior of her house that she's got like a gate situation. Someone's like knocking at that area, and she's shocked and doesn't know who it is, and they're yelling her first name, Erica. And the camera person is kind of surprised. And so they go out there and someone is saying, hi, I'm part of Tom's legal team.
Yeah, so his competency hearing is coming up, and we wanted to just know if you had a couple minutes to talk to us about Tom and his declining health and, you know, just stuff for his hearing. Can we talk tomorrow?
And to her credit, Erica's like,
well, you can talk to my lawyer. Give me your number and I'll have my lawyer call you.
And she goes back inside and she is really shaken that these people would just show up like that at her front gate, which is really surprising. Unless they were just trying to burn some billable hours, like time to drive there, time to shake the gate, time to drive back. It's really weird for people to just show up. Surely they know who her lawyer is. Surely they would just call her lawyer and say, hey, we need to reach out for these reasons. Can you, you know, communicate with your client? And that was really familiar for somebody to just show up and start yelling your first name when you've never met them. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. But maybe they were desperate. Maybe they'd been trying to get in touch with her. I don't know. So she takes this woman's card and she goes back inside and she's like,
who the hell was that? You gotta be effing kidding me. I don't have anything to say to her that I haven't already said.
She goes off for a long time mumbling about, like, how does she know if he's competent or not? All she knows is what she knows and what she lived through and how he was with her. And I'm going to speak on something now that I don't think I've ever really talked about before, which is a lot of people have brought it up, that how do you marry someone and, you know, say that it's for better or for worse. They give you all of these things to chase your dreams. They fund your lifestyle that's outrageous by anyone's standards. Talk about them so glowingly here. And yet, when one of two things happened, right? So she says that the only reason that she left was because he started to get cold with her. These are previous episodes of Beverly Hills that she said this stuff. So she left because his mood type situation changed. Well, if anyone has ever dealt with anyone who had cognitive decline, Alzheimer's, what have you, which I have in my family, that can be part of it. Mood change can be part of it. And she seems to believe that he does have cognitive decline and mental issues to leave him in the time when someone needs that kind of support the most. And she lamented on the show that his kids weren't showing up for him, his family wasn't showing up for him. Well, that's you. That's a role for you as well. So I've never understood her talking about him in these glowing ways and then being completely fine with leaving him. I don't know if that's something they talked about or if that's why then her lawyers are trying to make it seem like he was a monster and she was lucky to be able to get away, which just so happened to coincide with when he went broke. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that I think Tom Girardi does have mental decline, but she's saying he does. So for me, anyway, I slice it, it doesn't make sense for her saying how good he was to her, all the good times they have, but I left him. But I left him when he was in his moment of need and cognitive decline. That story that is being told to us, that doesn't make sense to me. The actual reality of whatever everything is, the facts, might make more sense. So it's frustrating to not really know them here. And as Erica's reading this woman's card that she gave her, she gets upset and just like sort of deflated because she reads the woman's name and then says, you know, something, something public defender. And she says,
he is a fucking public defender. The almighty Tom Girardi has a public defender.
Which if he knows what's going on, that has to be part of some strategy because he has plenty of lawyer friends. Or did they all leave him high and dry? Where is Walter Lack? The man that he had a partial ownership of a few jets that they also rented out so they could say they own jets. G&L Aviation LLC. Where is Walter? Por qué? Ue la Walter. Hell, even O.J. Simpson. All of his lawyer friends came rushing. They're like, cold blood, huh? Wow, let's see what we can do for you, bud. Like, where's Tom's lawyer friend, Coven? He didn't learn that by himself. He had to have had other people who are doing it, or maybe they don't want to come for it because I'll be like, well, I don't say that we're close, but like, I'll defend you. So I choose to believe that it's part of a strategy that he's running. Like, he and Walter had good times. You know, I'm sitting here thinking about it. Walter's the guy, they got up to some hijinks in the 90s and 2000s. They rented that yacht, that big, beautiful boat that's still in operation. And if you watch my dive on YouTube, I show a tour of the whole boat. I found that footage. I know. Found the exact boat. You can still rent it. You can still go on it today. But he and Walter, so cheeky. They took a bunch of money and they had a cruise on the boat, And they brought judges, other lawyers, but they called it like a seminar, like you were learning things. It was educational. It's not a boondoggle. It's not a bribe. It's educational. Yeah, the judges can all take their families and stuff on this amazing Mediterranean cruise that we're paying for, but don't make any mistakes here. Like, this is work. So you're paying them to be on board. Yeah, I mean, they're getting money and a vacation. Isn't that amazing? It is. But while that was frowned upon, nothing happened to Walter and Tom as a result of that cruise, which is pretty amazing. So anyway, he and Walter go way back, and I wonder, where is Walter? But Erica is still lamenting her woes, and she says it feels like she was in the mob. And there are a lot of similarities between Tom and a gangster, a godfather, other than truly being a made man. It's really just networking either way, you know? It's a game for the extroverts. You do people favors, then they owe you. You take a little money off the top here and there. Just enough that no one notices until you get too greedy. Start cooking the books and pretty soon the IRS comes knocking. Tale as old as time.
Feels like I can't get away from this life. That's what this residency is for me.
Black screen. 27 days. So we're slowly counting down to the Vegas show. But I'm noticing by the timestamps and by how far along we are in the show, we're already at 27 days to the show. And then I'm seeing as we jump lower and lower that we're going to get to the Vegas residency at about the 1 hour and something mark of this show. So it's going to be as much about Vegas as it is about the road to Vegas. And now Erica Jane is at a music studio because they're working on remixes of her hits. The Woman Who Lost Everything. A man in a ponytail sitting at a bunch of monitors is taking compliments from Erica. She likes the work he's done to remix her songs. And a lot of the Erica Jane thing is just men doing stuff, their vision for her and her being like, I like it. You know, like she really does just, she like Mikey, it's Mikey's kind of vision a lot of the times. And then whatever the music is remixed to be, this guy's like, yeah. And then this comes in and we're like, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, you're in Vegas. And she's like, yeah, I like that. So yeah, she would say if she, you know, likes or doesn't like, you know, a thumbs up or a thumbs down. But all in all, I don't see a lot of her having this super strong, clear viewpoint. Then they show Mikey getting there and he's, again, he's leading the meeting. So he's the project manager of this. He sits down with Erica and the man with his hair in a ponytail and he says, I have a few things we need to get through today. Here's what I want to accomplish. For you to hear everything that he has done, because I guarantee you that you have not heard everything. And Erica says, well, I guarantee you're right. Okay, and now number two, you need to decide which songs we're going to use the backup dancers for. So they start to play the remixes of her songs. And the guy with the ponytail feels that it's very important that they get some live musicians. He's like, I'll do the, you know, I got the keys. I'll be the piano. But then we got this guy. We need some drums. And then we need this and we need that. And Erica says,
it's expensive to be me.
And everyone laughs. Another black screen, because why not? Privilege is written in white letters. They show Erica Jane's very first confessional interview that was filmed in her house. And the year is 2015, and she's got, you know, a black outfit on with her hair half up in a barrette, and she's being very, you know, sassy on camera. And behind her comes a younger Mikey Minden in jorts, jeans that are shorts that are cut to the knee, jorts, and sort of like a red jersey of some kind. He's carrying a bottle of water. And I'm like, oh, so much has changed, but so much hasn't. And she's really fixated on looking back at the house. And she's talking about,
look at my home and all that stuff.
And they show the house, they pan over all of it, which I never liked it, okay? I never liked it. I thought it was silly that they had this giant, long, thin fountain situation in the back. And I don't know, I just felt like it was a waste of water in California. I'm like, you can't swim in it. What's the point of it? It's like if you have your own, you know, reflecting pool, what are you going to do with that? It's just going to get full of like dead worms and bird poo. And I did not like the decor. To each their own, it was not my cup of tea. It really did look like a man in his 80s lived there and had never updated it, except there were random naked photos of Erica Jane on the walls. They show her giant closet packed full of a bunch of crap and name brand things. And they show footage of her buying purses, I think. I think this is where they did that. They did like a big old B-roll dump of just all her greatest hits, walking on to the partially owned rentable jet, buying things in Vegas, all her crazy glam outfits and shopping and cars.
That's all gone. Now I'm getting a lesson on living on a budget. I'm alone. I'm doing it all on my own.
Miss Jardy, question in the back. Yeah, me, right here. Thank you so much, yeah. You're doing it all on your own, but, you know, Jim Wilkes has been giving you millions of dollars, according to him, his statements in The Housewife and The Hustle Part 2, so I just... Oh, okay. Besides that on your own. Okay, good. Okay, we're caught up. She also makes it very clear to us in how much is riding on this residency for her. She's giddy about it, but she feels that it's her make-or-break moment.
I feel overwhelmed. And then I'm excited, and then I'm overwhelmed. We were given a budget from Live Nation, which is great. However, to make it fabulous, another 100 grand would be amazing. Because you only have one chance to make a first impression. People don't understand.
And let me stop you right there. Let me stop you right there. There's that same mentality that I just read, reading over all of the text messages to Marco Marco. It was never enough. For Erica and Mikey, it will never be enough. Live Nation or whomever is paying for this fiasco could never give them a big enough budget to satisfy them. They spent almost $1 million having Marco Marco make these custom bespoke outfits over two and a half years. Almost $1 million. Once she had a costume, they just kept adding more to it.
More fringe, more.
If they think that this comeback, in quotes, is going to be, you know, is a make or break based on a live percussionist, like, think again.
I have one chance to prove that I can sell tickets.
Narrator, she could not sell the tickets. Soon the tickets would be sold for $7 each. And that is the danger of not having anybody in your circle that's like completely honest with you. She did way too much harm to herself to have a crowd big enough to, like, book a flight to Vegas. We've done it. BravoCon, we've been there. For people on the East Coast, that is a long flight to trek out there for an 80-minute show. So who are you pulling from? L.A., you want people to drive? Catch a 50-buck quick flight? You just trying to get some tourists? You just trying to hope that enough tourists are in the area that they see it and they want to come to that? I do not think that she realizes the negative optics that she has. The danger of not being able to take constructive criticism is that she probably thinks that anybody who says anything negative about her is just a hater.
Oh, they're just a hater.
Whereas for a lot of us, you know, myself, I don't care what someone says. I'm always like, hold on, let me think about that. I'm going to run it through real quick, you know? I'm going to skim it. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to ponder it, even for 1 second. I don't think she does that. I do not think there's a lot of self-reflection. I think she feels bad for herself and bad for her situation, but not in a way where she thinks her behavior is at all contributing to something negative about her life, or moreover, that she can change it all into a positive if she were to be capable suddenly of overcoming her ego. I don't know if that makes any sense or if that just makes sense to me. I'm leaving it in. Now big letters on the screen say 25 days. Then in smaller white letters it says, Erica Jane was denied a $100,000 budget increase this morning.
Ooh.
She asked Live Nation for more money and they said no. I don't think she's used to hearing no. She got to buy whatever she wanted before when she was stunting as Erica Jane, and now she's got to do it on a budget. So then this is where it turns into a comedy, because
she's like, well, don't disrupt my creative process on a Monday morning with bad effing news.
Her being denied a loan that she asked for of $100,000, them not wanting to do that, is them messing with her creative process. I can't. And Mikey is just hyping her. He's just like,
enough.
They are just having a little bitch sesh.
I know what my problem is. We're over budget. Okay, great. Hooray.
They're over budget. Not only do you want more money,
but you're already over budget? You really are in the mob because you got some bulls to go to Live Nation when you're already over budget and ask for more money. How do you sit with bulls that big? You gotta lean, huh? Yeah.
You heard me take an additional gummy. We don't know where this road goes, but it's a fun road to be on, isn't it? And this is where the story is really a test for our hero. Really a test. And we're going to have to rise up and we're going to have to meet a challenge head on. It's Homer-esque. And Erica says,
if they're not going to give me the money, I'll figure out how to get it myself. I always have.
And by herself, she means through a rich white man.
Like, this is going to stop me. If I can get through what I've been through, I can get through this.
It's your reputation. It's my reputation on the line, said Mikey.
If we stop, it's over for me. It's a career.
And she doesn't even get to finish that thought because Mikey jumps in, realizing that we're really ratcheting it up now. And he's got to bring his A game. And he says,
everything is hinging on August 25th. Your whole life.
Black screen, 22 days until the show. Jazzercise montage, 20 days until the show. Jazzercise montage with Mikey yelling,
2 and 3 and.
Suddenly they're all seated and Mikey is going over Erica's schedule. She's going to tape Watch What Happens Live and then go back to rehearsals. We see her in full glam, which the amount of glam is really so shocking because, you know, we've seen her with no makeup on before. It really is alarming, like how much just goes into the presentation of a woman on Bravo. It's so much effort. It didn't used to be that way. It did not. I think it has gotten a bit out of hand. That whole glam thing that Erica brought on to Real Housewives, if you're going to have, you know, Real Housewives of wherever, not everybody has that or is that person. So it's almost like now they're casting the same type of person. Or if somebody is a little bit different, they have to become that person in order to just keep up with the standard. Like Denise being her ragamuffin self when she was trying to be on camera and like people made fun of her for it. People go on trips, they're expected to bring their glam on trips now. Just something I think about, you know? So Erica's putting on a ton of lip gloss and she goes out and she's with Andy on Watch What Happens Live. He announces her. They talk about her behavior on the show over the last 3 years. And then, boom, we cut to a black screen with betrayal written in white letters. A producer hands Erica Jane a phone where she watches the clip from 2 years ago where Garcelle is asking her, why didn't you just give the money back, the earrings back to victims? And Erica is getting extremely mad, like,
are they stolen?
And Garcelle says, I don't know. Watch out, here comes some cursing, because this is an Erica Jane production.
How fucking dare you?
Then they show Crystal when she was asking her about victims and Erica, you know, it's the whole scene where Erica yells,
all I care about is me.
So they, in this, in what we just watched, that whole flashback of that entire thing, they played every ugly thing she said and did except for that. They left out the all I care about is me. And she's mad now. She's riled because what we see is her bad behavior when we look back at those clips. But what she sees is people questioning her, people not trusting her, making her life harder. So she says,
let me say this. None of them would survive in this environment that I am in. I'll just say that.
She starts going off saying that her cast members didn't care how she felt, that all they did was judge her and accuse her of things. Then it gets extremely dark, trigger warning. Talk of suicidal ideation, of Erica saying that's when you start to ask yourself, you know, whether or not, why are you here, she says. And then she straight up says that she thought about killing herself many times. But that talking to her son, he was like, okay, well, you're not going to do that. You're not going to give up. You're going to stick it to them. And she's like, yeah, I'm going to stick it to them. And so it's like spite pulled her out of it. Then they cut back to the Watch What Happens Live that she was on with Andy asking her if she feels vindicated now that she has a Vegas residency.
And she's like, well, I told everyone, you know, give me time. I said, give me a little time and you'll see.
Then in small white letters, it says Erica Jane applied for a $100,000 loan before leaving New York City. So a lot came at us really fast. They don't really dwell on,
you know, the dark message that she communicated.
And whatever we think of Erica Jayne and whatever she has to answer for legally, karmically, in civil cases, what have you, nobody wants to hear that from another human being. So we are glad she's on the other side of it now.
They cut to her calling Mikey, I believe, where she's saying she did not get the loan.
Because of all the litigation, I'm tied to Tom. It's my last name.
So she thinks it's because of her association with Tom. Whereas I would say it's not even just that. It's like the liability. You signed off on loan guarantees. Like, you're a judge declared it that people could come after you civilly. Victims could try to look for money there. So when you owe that kind of money, people are not going to just give you $100,000. And they show us on screen after their September 2020 separation, their divorce was never finalized. She's talking about how she's still punished for his mistakes.
I've worked hard to rebuild and have my own life. And that's what this residency means to me. Am I ever going to get away from this?
Get away from me with this. Now, at one point, Sutton offered her money to help her get on her feet and help her leave. And so she's tried to ask Live Nation, and she tried for a personal loan. I just find it hard to believe that she, all these rich people that she hangs out with, they couldn't all give her like 10 grand or something. So she probably just didn't want to ask them. So she didn't want it that bad. Then we get more B-roll of dancers dancing and inappropriate jazzercise. And everyone is practicing very hard, but Mikey is frustrated. He's critiquing Erica. She's not giving enough. It's a bit of a lackluster performance and energy. He's telling her as much, and she doesn't know her steps yet. She's not off book, as they say. He gets so irritated. She's making excuses. She's like,
I've got a lot going on.
And Mikey walks off. He walks into a room, I think, where they're working on this docu, whatever this is. And he's like, sorry, guys. She just, like, doesn't know the show at all. And he walks off, and he goes outside to go vent with Laia. And they're talking to each other, and he's like, she's just not checked in one bit. And Erica followed them outside, and she peeks her head around.
What's going on?
And Mikey says, I'm just so frustrated with the process of what's going on in there.
So am I. We have so many other things going on. Like, I wish I wasn't up in New York City trying to market this thing, sell this show. I wish I was here. I just need practice.
She talks about the stakes being so high. She's tired and she's forgetting her, you know, her steps and her stuff because they're there for so long. And after that many hours, anybody could forget the lyrics and the moves to the new song Drip Drop. But she perseveres. She gets through it, nose to the grindstone. And Mikey waits for a while to let her practice with everybody. And then he comes back in and he says, wow me. And so they jazzercise like they've never jazzercised before. And at the end, four young men lift her body into the air where she kicks a foot 50. Mikey is pleased. Then in a weird moment, she starts talking, well, first of all, it says 9 days now. Okay. Then in a weird moment, she starts talking about how they're going to go to center stage. And I recognized it right away because it was in the Marco Marco lawsuit as a studio where they would go and Marco would go for fittings or they'd bring her costumes there. And she talks about it like it's this brand name thing, this famous place with a good reputation or whatever. And she's like,
I was from back in the day, I would go to center stage.
So she's telling us like this is revisiting her old stomping grounds of yore, puss patting grounds of yore. When she walks into center stage, there's a real life version of the House of Blues. They've recreated it so they can dance upon it and be fully prepared for the terrain. It's an emotional moment. Everyone is crying and hugging. 6 days is put on screen. Also information that in this current timeline, they're being hit by Hurricane Hillary, which was the first hurricane to hit that part of California in like 80-something years. Everyone braves the precipitation and they get to rehearsals anyway. Brave souls are shown walking through the light rain into the studio. Most of them didn't have a raincoat on. They are as dedicated as they are damp. Erica Jayne has thrown herself onto a circle bed, a round bed, and they roll her on out, and she's cackling the whole time. And that, dear friends, is where I walked away for the evening. I had hit my limit, mentally, physically, emotionally, and I realized once I get into 8-9 pages of notes that it's going to be an hour. And while Erica's comfortable dropping a 2-hour special, I am not.
I try to keep it to an hour around here. We have things to do. So sadly, I will have to watch more of this. I did not mean for this to be a two-parter, but that's all I can do. Physically, that's all I can do. And if you want to take it up with anybody, you can blame Bravo. Because I think everyone thought they're going to break this up into, you know, 2 or 3 weeks or something like that after the season wrapped. I'd never expected them to drop a 2-hour chunk of just be like, just poop it all out and keep walking like a giraffe mid-step. Move Miami and drop this hot wad. I didn't expect that. No one expected that. I cannot watch a 2-hour stretch of that. I cannot. You know, Erica, when they asked her if she could explain further why she met with the victims,
I cannot. I cannot. I cannot.
That's me with this documentary. I cannot watch more than an hour.
But an hour of Erica gyrating and then trying to paint Tom as the best lawyer that ever lived and he was so great. It's a lot to ask.
But when I started my account, I was very inspired by Mystery Science Theater 3000, a show I loved as a kid. And this reminded me of that. Much more frustrating, almost maddening, but still kind of as fun. But unlike Mystery Science Theater 3000, I don't think they ever did reality shows. And that makes this such a weird quagmire to be in. Because again, I think we can have compassion for Erica Jane. We can feel for her and her lowest moments. We can enjoy her dog. And we can also say that what she did to Chris of Marco Marco, it's absolutely horrifying in my opinion. And how she talked about victims on the show and things that she said and didn't say, refused to say, and the earrings, all of that is horrible. And none of that had to be that way. Those are choices that she made. All of these things can exist. But I hope that recap was helpful to those who don't have the time, the bandwidth, or the inclination to watch a documentary on Erica Jane by Erica Jane. Next pod will drop on Thursday. That will likely be a recap of this is the last episode of the reunion of Beverly Hills. Well, the Kyle show. We'll see which direction that goes in, but I think it's going to be, you know, Kathy talking about Morgan. It really has turned into the Kyle show, hasn't it? I mean, I think it has been for a while, but this season is just more apparent than ever. But in the interim, please like and follow this podcast. Hit me up on Instagram DM if you've got thoughts or insights into any of this you want to share. But whatever you do, don't be like Erica and Mikey. If you're already over budget and you have a track record for spending money like water, don't begrudge your residency sponsor for not being willing to shell out more cash.